from KQED.
Hey, everybody, from KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, KQED's politics editor.
I'm Marisa Lagos, and today on The Breakdown, he was once called Gavin Newsom's brain, Svengeli, I think, a mad scientist at City
Hall. Man behind the curtain.
Yes, and now he doesn't work for him anymore.
No, he doesn't, but political consultant Eric Jay is here. He's working for Newsom's opponent in the governor's race, Antonio Villaraigosa. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, Marisa Lagos, I have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
From last week's show. I was not here.
You were not here.
You were
gallivanting.
Well, that was it. You said I was gallivanting. And I actually looked up gallivant.
I have it right here.
I looked it up in dictionary.com. One, to wander about seeking pleasure or diversion. Two, to go about with members of the opposite sex. Anybody who knows me knows one of those two is not right.
The first one's right, though. And it was, pleasure, Hawaii.
I had a Mai Tai.
Okay.
All right, kill me.
I'm glad you enjoyed your time off. Katie was fabulous.
She was fabulous. And now we're back. So let's live in the present.
Okay, fine.
There's a new poll out today, Berkeley IGS
just
poll.
Just today.
Newsom, governor's race, Newsom, 30%, followed by, and this is new, a couple of Republicans, John Cox, who's been in number two spot, two or three, is at 18%. And then another Republican, Assemblyman from Orange County, Travis Allen at 16%, and Antonio Villaraigosa, former mayor of L.A., at 9%. We're going to talk with our guest about that in a minute. But what do you make of that poll?
Well, I mean, I think I make that the governor's race is just getting started. I mean, these guys, some of them like Newsom, have been running, you could say, for 10 years. But I think the public's starting to pay attention. The money's starting to flow. I think the next few weeks are going to be really important. And clearly, I mean, we have a top two primary, right? I think we need to spell this out every time because it's still a little confusing
primary
to folks. So whoever gets the top two spots in that election, regardless of party status, will move on. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, it could be a Cox Newsom battle royale. I think our guests will tell us otherwise, but
I'm not sure it would be a battle royale, would it? I mean, who knows? You know, you never know. But given the positions John Cox and Travis Allen take,
I
mean, it's tough. You know, I did talk to a unnamed Republican operative today. who doesn't believe the poll, actually.
And what did he not believe?
He didn't believe that he or she didn't believe that 85% of Republicans have made up their minds, that only 11% or whatever it was are undecided, and that number for Travis Allen is artificially high.
I mean, I think that's probably
possible.
True.
That's possible.
I mean, look, all the polls are going to have slightly different takes on things. We could probably do it. We should maybe
we should
do an
let's have Mark
DeCamillo
on sometime.
But, you know, it is interesting. I mean, certainly Cox has some momentum among Republicans. People see an R next to a name, and if they're Republican, they are probably more likely to support that person.
And he's been on TV. He's got money, so that makes sense. But the Travis Allen thing is kind of like where that comes from. It's hard to explain, And I just want to mention the Senate race where, you know, sort of the headline was, oh, Feinstein's way ahead. 28% she's at in that poll. There's 37% undecided.
That's interesting.
Which I think is a really high. I mean, they know who Dianne Feinstein is, you know,
right.
So they're not. You have to wonder, like, I'm not sure that Kevin DeLeon can make up the huge difference, the advantages she has in money and name ID and all that. But it's not.
And there's been polls showing that, like, Republicans are favoring him over her, which I think, if true, just shows, like, it's just the unknown quantity thing.
Yeah.
Like, people, you know, if you've been in the state for a long time, like you said, you know Dianne Feinstein, you probably don't like her, but KDL's positioned himself far to the left of her. So,
yeah. And we should say DeLeon was at 11% in this poll, and then this totally unknown Republican, James P. Bradley, was in third with 10%. So nobody quite knows what to make of that. I'm quite sure I could not pick him out of a lineup, James P. Bradley.
Well, I think you Googled him. You probably could now.
I did, but I forgot what he looked like. So, you know, who knows? We'll see. I mean, it's we'll see. But it did sort of come out of the blue. But they don't have a well-known Republican running. So,
well, and these are all races, obviously, that will be on the primary ballot. But I think we're also starting to get a better sense of what the November ballot could look like when it comes to ballot initiatives.
Yeah, and
right?
The big one, of course, we're hearing that the supporters of a repeal of the gas tax, Jerry Brown's 12 cents a gallon gas tax, could have enough signatures. They say they have enough signatures. Carl DeMaio, who's kind of a Southern California
shock
jock, former member of the city council in San Diego, also leading the charge on the repeal the sanctuary state law. He's been leading that up as well. And I think the Republicans are hoping that, especially if John Cox doesn't make it into the top two, that maybe this will help bring Republican voters out in
November. Or especially if he does, right? I mean...
Well, either way. Yeah, but, either way. It's sort of their plan B, I guess.
And I do think that, you know, is a safe bet that it could help drive some conservative turnout. You know, the other ballot measure that is still fairly nascent, but I've been tracking, is a criminal justice ballot measure being pushed by law enforcement and some Republican interests, which would actually roll back a lot of the criminal justice reforms of recent years. And as we're seeing the fundraising numbers for this last quarter come in, Jerry Brown has opened a new ballot measure committee to fight that. Hasn't put any money in yet, but he's got about $15 million in his other one. And then, you know, we're seeing tens of thousands of dollars flow from groups like the San Francisco Police Officers Association, the statewide police officers
groups. To this repeal effort.
Yeah. And so that to me is another interesting one, because that could also potentially drive conservative turnout, but it could also backfire if Jerry Brown decides to, you know, spend
beat
his
it
last
down.
Cash.
Yeah, well,
on
he's
that.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, in a way, Jerry Brown's legacy is on the ballot to some extent.
Don't say that word. He hates.
I know he hates that word, but you know, that's the truth. The other big thing on the ballot, by the way, and it's also we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but the realtors are putting money behind a ballot measure to expand Prop 13, so you can actually take your low property tax rates with you to a new house,
no matter how much that house costs or where it is.
Yeah,
in the state, obviously.
Hey, let's repeal the gas tax and make the next time around, if you want to raise the gas tax, you got to get voters' approval. I mean, that has resonance with people, you know, because nobody wants to vote to raise their own gas tax. You know, it does have resonance. But I think it's going to be a real battle on that one. The polls have shown that very close already. So we'll see what happens. We want to get to Eric Jay. Do we want to talk real briefly about there was the big news this week was actually another criminal justice issue. The Golden State Killer arrested Joseph James D'Angelo, former cop up in Auburn area, arrested in Citrus Heights, suburb of Sacramento. And what was interesting, we talked about this earlier, the DA in Sacramento, Anne-Marie Schubert, was there front and center with
taking a victory
DAs.
Lap, who really, you know, does deserve credit. She really sort of revived this case, started a task force. Crazy story about how they caught this guy with DNA and using some of these, like, online...
Ancestry.com or
well,
something.
Not them, they
not
say.
Them.
Of course.
Like them.
Yeah, to track down family members and then figure out sort of backwards who this guy was through DNA. But again, interesting, you know, Anne-Marie Schubert has been in the hot seat. Stephon Clark's killing in Sacramento, she's the one looking into whether police acted legally justified force. And she's also backing that criminal justice repeal ballot measure.
And she got a nice contribution to her campaign right as all that was happening.
From
police groups, yeah. So that we'll keep
and
an
also
eye on
up
that.
There, Alameda DA Nancy O'Malley, who's getting a challenger from the left. So I think, you know, this is all to say, I think there's going to be a lot on this ballot in November that's going to go well beyond the governor's race and is, you know, important.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be joined in just a minute by political consultant Eric Jay. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos, along with Scott Schaefer. And today, Eric Jay in the house. He is the founder and president of Storefront Media in San Francisco, a longtime fixture in San Francisco and Democratic politics in the Golden State. And
proprietor, according to the website, he is the proprietor of that. We'll talk about that
very
in a
proper.
Minute. His clients now include former L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, who's running for governor, Supervisor Jane Kim, who was on our show
just a
few weeks ago. She's running for mayor of San Francisco. Eric Jay, welcome to Political Breakdown.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
What do you do? What does a political consultant
do? How do you
spend your time?
It's a conference call after a conference call. You know, it's not that exciting. You know, a political consultant essentially helps candidates tell their stories in all kinds of ways. So today we prepped for an editorial board. We talked about a debate that's going to come up in Fresno next week. With Jane Kim, we talked about an attack from a billionaire and how we might respond to that. So you try to help people tell their stories the best way they can.
So you're not their campaign manager. Somebody else has that position. So how, like, are you talking to the candidates directly most days, or is it more kind of talking to the campaign staff via you?
Most days we talk to the candidates. Okay. And I'm lucky, you know, I have a firm, there's 30 people who work there, and there's some of the best people in America who work there. So Julie Edwards works with Jane Kim every day, and you might know her from the Elizabeth Warren campaign. And so we've got, we run pretty deep there, just like you do.
So we're six weeks away from the election. So what's happening in campaigns right now? I mean, people are hand-wringing.
You mentioned an attack ad.
Yeah. I mean, like, so what happens when you wake up in the morning and you see, oh, Jane Kim has been attacked with this, you know, YouTube ad funded by the wife of a angel investor slash, you know, Silicon Valley guy?
Well, it's the week, you know, that people start to melt down, Scott, you know, and the weak ones get culled out. And this week, if you can't handle the pressure, you know, you go work for the city or do something like that. And there is a lot of pressure. And this is the week in California, certainly, at this pace where people start to attack each other. And it's because we don't have election day anymore. We have election month. And the ballots go out 28 days before the election. And so it's really starting right now.
Well, you know, in San Francisco is ranked choice voting. And then, of course, we got the top two primary, which Marisa alluded to a minute ago. How does that change your strategy about who you attack and how or whether to attack?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm lucky, and maybe there's been some choice in that, too. I try to work for people who don't want to attack anybody and are working hard just to tell their story.
And is that because you don't think it's effective or you don't think it's moral or right?
Well, I do think it can be effective. Ron Conway, the billionaire again, is attacking Jane Kim and Mark Leno and anybody else who he thinks is in his way. And they do it because they think it works. But, you know, Marissa, at a certain point, you know, Storefront is more than a political consulting firm. We're an ad agency, and we're lucky. We've got some great clients, and we got to make some choices about the politicians we work for. And we try to work for people like Antonio Villaraigosa or Jane Kim or Sam Liccardo. I know you've had a KQED before, who are trying to accomplish big things in the world.
So I know one of the things that consultants do is they sit around with others, smart people, and come up with slogans and, you know, kind of snappy lines to use on brochures and so on. So Antonio Villaraigosa, for example, one of his slogans is a governor for all of California. So how did you come up with that? And what does it mean?
Well, we might have a problem because that's not our slogan.
What?
Giving voice to every Californian is
giving
our slogan.
Voice.
Oh.
And
but it's you say he says
he
that.
Does say it a lot. And he says a number of things in that space. And that's his diagnosis. You know, he will tell you before he ran for office or made the decision to run for governor, he went all over California on a listening tour. And, you know, he was just very struck by the contrasts of great wealth in places like San Francisco and really crushing poverty in places like the Central Valley. And he thinks that the state, if it's going to move forward, it needs to move forward together. Now, on the question, good slogans or good messages really should come from the candidates themselves. You can always tell, I can tell, when they're saying something that their political consultant told them to say.
For example?
Well, I will, in due respect to the lieutenant governor, and we talked about that. He's saying a lot of things now that he's become a progressive when he was never a progressive. And he doesn't always sound like his heart is in it.
So speaking of, like, you know, you work for Newsom for years. You guys parted ways. Now you're working for Villaraigosa. Actually, Newsom's consultants used to work for Villaraigosa. So this is like a whole tangled
it's a soap
web
opera,
of,
isn't it?
Yes,
yeah. Like an NFL
for sure.
Trade.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're also so he's running a more moderate campaign. I think you mentioned, you know, he's been in the Central Valley a lot. He's trying to really appeal to a wide swath. Probably, you know, Newsom has sort of claimed the left flank. You're also running Jane Kim's campaign, mm-hmm. who is like a very progressive left as left can be San Franciscan. I'm just curious, like, how do you keep it all straight? And is there a through line? Because not all these people seem like they would necessarily agree on all policy issues.
Well, nor should they. And I don't think political consultants should necessarily have their own politics, though I think it's very, very important that they have their own values and that they pay attention to those values. And political consultants are an enormous part of the American political landscape and not a very favorable or positive part of that
People
landscape.
Probably like you more than us, though.
I think that we're pretty much down there with journalists.
Journalists and lawyers.
And lawyers. And Congress.
And Congress, right. And look, in the case of political consulting, in a better world, there would be less political consulting. And that's a reality. There's too much money in politics. There's too many billionaires. There's a world in which oligarchs can write big checks and can try to buy elections. And political consultants help them do that.
Yeah.
And there's a number of great things about political consulting. And we try to help people who have never run for office before. You try to help people tell their stories and find their voice and win campaigns to do good things. But there's a lot of very negative things about the way American politics has been constructed in the last few years. And political consultants have to take responsibility. We all have to take responsibility for our role in that.
Do you have you had or do you have clients or candidates you worked for that you really didn't believe in?
Not anymore. Not anymore. No.
Now that what?
You know, Scott, you knew me when I was younger, and I was more into the game then. I liked it. I liked the way that it was a way that you could do a lot of things that would get you in trouble in a normal job, but it was just part of a day's work as a political consultant. But as I've gotten older, and you know, you guys talked about your kids. Marissa talked about her kids. As you have a different view of the world as you think about the world as a parent. I prefer now to work for people who I believe in. I don't necessarily always agree with all their political positions, but I try to work for people who I think are authentic, who believe it themselves. That's the key.
Yeah, authenticity.
Yeah.
So you were sort of known as being very tech savvy. Grassroots is the name of your campaign. I mean, there was some speculation when you left Newsom in 2009 that some of that was sort of a clash between you and another consultant who was more sort of traditional. I'm curious because, you know, online and the tech aspect has become so important to all aspects of our life, but certainly campaigns. Were you like too early to that, do you feel like? Like, did you kind of see something coming that maybe others didn't?
Look, we were very early to that. And that's partially because of the way our firm is constructed. You know, we don't do one thing. We do radio and television and mail and digital.
I want to talk about mail in a second.
That's do skywriting if we thought it would work. And we have a data analytics unit in our firm now, and we're always analyzing what works. So we try to do what works. Digital media works because it allows you to talk to people who you have a good sense might be responsive to what you're saying.
Like now, more micro-targeting sort of?
Micro-targeting. And there's also psychographic targeting.
Which we've been hearing Cambridge about
Analytica.
Lately.
There's Cambridge Analytica, which is, an abuse or not, depending on your perspective. It's a little bit ironic for those of us who work with Facebook every day that this is seen by many as a one-off. This is Facebook's business model.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is what they sell. This is why they're one of the most powerful and wealthiest companies in the world, is because they have so many data points on all of us who use Facebook. And those data points are for sale.
And that's like so different. I mean, that didn't exist 10, 15, 20 years ago. Like, how has that changed the way you do your job?
And why is mail, which is so old school, why is that, you know, snail mail, why is that still part of the game?
Look, it's coming back. The U.S. Postal Service reported that last year there was more mail than at any time, right? And anyone who lives in San Francisco, watch out.
Every
right?
day.
Empty your mailbox or it's going to fall off its post, right? Here it comes. That's because political consultants, and not just political consultants, that's because advertisers like to target people who they know are going to be responsive to that message. And with mail, I'll use jargon of political consulting. I'll let you in on a little inside secret here. It's called addressable. And what addressable means is we can figure out okay, it's going to a Democratic woman under the age of 50 in a high-performing progressive precinct who probably has kids according to the model. Well, there's probably a picture, you know, of something that she is going to respond to, as opposed to an older Republican man.
But that's, like, interesting to me because online you actually know who these people are in a far more sort of robust way. Whereas, and I get, like, statewide it might be very easy to say Republican versus Democrat. But, like, what about in a city like San Francisco where, you know, most people are Democrats? Is it more about, I don't know exactly where they live or, like how do you even sort that out?
Ethnicity, sexual orientation, all that stuff.
It's a lot of data points. There's a lot of data points when you fill out your voter registration form. Mm. And then there are data points that are gathered about you. And I'm not proposing that I think that this is necessarily nice or should be done, but it is available and it is done. One of the reasons why it's done is because our politics are so divided and Republicans are not really listening to Democrats. You mentioned earlier the Republican vote. Well, you know, in California, your party label is on the ballot. Republican vote coalesces very early because when you read the name to the respondent, the pollster reads the name to the respondent, they say, John Cox, Republican. And Republicans say, he's my guy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're living in a world in which people are very divided. And so there's no point in talking to people who you know are going to reject your position, because they've already made up their mind.
I want to take you back to an early campaign, earlier in your career, and you were working for Clint Riley at the time, who was a legendary political consultant.
Great political consultant.
Yeah. And so you and your firm at that time, his firm, ran Nancy Pelosi's very first campaign for Congress in 1987.
A voice that will be heard.
A voice that will be heard was the slogan. Yeah. And she had to be heard over about 12 other candidates.
Yes, she did.
Right? That was a huge field. And it's so interesting. I was here at that time, and I remember it well. And I don't know if you were here, but not here literally, but KQED in another building had a debate with all 12 candidates with Nancy Pelosi. And Clint Riley threatened at the last minute to pull out of it because they were afraid they were going to gang up on her. What do you remember about, you know, that night and about that campaign?
Well, I mean, I think Nancy Pelosi, by the way, is going to be the speaker again. And
heard it here first, guys.
And nobody deserves it more than she does. You know, she was a citizen. She was a mom. Yeah, she had been involved in
she was the party chair.
She had been involved in party politics, but she had never run for office before.
That always fascinates
me. Yeah, and
she
stepped up and did so. And to watch her career and to have had the very, very fortunate chance to be part of that campaign team at the time is honor.
But she was considered the conservative in the race, or one of the more conservative. She was called the a dilettante. She was called the party girl, referring to the Democratic Party.
She was called all kinds of terrible names. But you know, she got used to it back in San Francisco, and now I think it doesn't faze her when the Republicans in Congress go after her.
Yeah, she got thick skin.
Seem to care all that much. Not to get too, but I do want to go back. So I was looking at some of the work you've done, and your firm has sort of a lot of facets. And I noticed that you guys do have a political mail agency, Speakeasy Political.
Speakeasy, that's it.
And it looks to me like Paperless Post or Evite or one of these places where I could like go and get, you know, create an invite to my kid's birthday. Can you just tell us because I think when I think about political consultants, I think of you guys sitting there and sort of designing each and every piece of mail for a specific candidate and tailoring it to them. But this is a little bit more of like a sort of
DIY
template.
Yeah, Speakeasy Political, and you know, two of my great colleagues, again, you know, Storefront isn't one person; it's a whole lot of people. And Bergen Canny and Danielle Winterhalter, two great consultants, run that operation. And it's exciting. You know, there are hundreds of thousands of people out there in California and out there in the world, in America rather, excuse me, who want to run for office, but they don't know how. They don't have a political consultant. They don't know where to get a printer. You know, maybe Uncle Billy can help them, maybe not. And so this is a tool that we're laying out there that people can use. And there's a companion. It's a digital media, self-service digital media tool.
Yeah, and you have a book called 101 Steps to Victory.
Yeah,
are you putting yourself out of business?
Why 101? Like, what's the 101st?
You know, 102, we just had to edit out for space. No, we're not trying to put ourselves out of business, but we are trying to get out of the business of running small campaigns, and we've gotten out of the business of running small campaigns. And frankly, one of the reasons why we started those political technologies is people were coming to us all the time saying, hey, please help me. I'm running for school board, or I'm running for city council, or I'm running for water board. And we couldn't help them, so we developed these tools to help them.
And a lot of people these days are stepping up. They want to run.
You know, both of these products have been used all over the country. You know, we were involved in the Virginia races. We were involved in a number of important races in the last year.
We just have a couple minutes left, but there's a couple of things I want to ask you about. I heard from someone, we did Oppo research on
you. There you go.
And I heard that you bought and drove a used car with a famous previous owner. I think it was maybe a Plymouth Satellite Blue.
You know, Jerry Brown, when he was governor, had a Plymouth Satellite. And I remembered that. And Willie Brown, when I worked for him, owned the Satellite.
He owned the car?
Willie
he
had
owned
it.
Owned the car, and he was selling it. And so I bought it. I remember showing up with a check, and he's like, I don't take checks, Mr. Jay.
but the
punchline here is a few years back, I was in Sacramento, and after the Governor Brown was inaugurated, and there out front of the governor's mansion was the blue Satellite.
The same
you
one?
Got it back?
Teaches you never to buy a used car from Willie Brown, doesn't it?
It was a lemon. What did you find in the glove compartment?
I actually found some notes from the Highway Patrol. They're a code book from the Highway Patrol. So I guess there must have been two. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Interesting. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted, I mean, yeah, we have like a minute and a half left. I'm just curious, as somebody who's like steeped in one huge statewide campaign, one really busy, what do you do for fun? Do you have fun?
You know, I do it for work, and I do it for fun.
Oh,
I mean, like a lot of people in our business, we love what we do. And we're fortunate to get to do what we do because we get to think about politics. We get to think about people. We get to think about issues. And we do it all day long and all night long. And it's fun for us.
Your wife's okay with that?
She's good. She's probably not the biggest fan of politics.
Of campaign season.
Campaign season.
Election season.
Yeah.
All right, Eric Jay, thanks so much
for having me.
Appreciate it. That does it for this edition of Political Breakdown. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe, maybe rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Katie Orr is our Sacramento reporter, and our producer is Guy Marzorati. Our engineer is Seal Muller, and Ethan Lindsay. I know Ethan's name.
Ethan.
Is our managing editor. Holly Kernan's our VP of news. I'm Marisa Lagos. You can follow me on Twitter at MLagos.
I'm Scott Schaefer. You can follow me on Twitter at @ScottSchaefer/Gallivant.
Yes.
That is a wrap for this week's Political Breakdown from KQED. We'll see you next time.